And welcome to another edition of Amana Podcast. Amana is a collective of people, places, things, and actions that transcend us, exploring your higher virtues and being led by your values in your life. And what takes you off track and how do you get back on track? And today it gives me a great pleasure to introduce my cousin, Tiffany Johnson. Say good day, Tiff.
Hi. It's so exciting to be here with you, Mark.
Oh my gosh, this is too weird in some ways, right?
It's so strange.
You know, I have known you since birth.
So, yeah.
And talking of that, let's talk a little bit about, I guess, our family. So, you know, my father is your mother's, their brother and sister. So that's the Harradine side of the family. And why don't you share a little bit about where you grew up and how you grew up. Let's start there.
Okay. My upbringing was completely different to yours. We lived in the country. Well, when I was really little, I was born in Victoria and I was 6 months old. We moved back to New South Wales and we lived in suburbia till I was about eight, I think. And then we moved out to a farm. And you used to come out in the school holidays and stuff. Do you remember? And
I do.
Yeah.
That was intentionally, because I wanted to learn about the farm. I wanted to be with you guys. And I had it very close inside of me early that, you know, I want to be connected to this family.
Mm. Yeah. So we always had a very strong love of our grandmother that we shared, your father's and my mother's mother, who always brought us together as well, which was pretty special. But the farm life is so different to the city life. And I don't play tennis. I can't even hit the bloody tennis ball. So not good at sport. You guys got all the sport genes and my brother, but I dipped down on all of that. So it was lots of freedom. There was space. There was no fear. Ride motorbikes and ride horses and go for walks, and you know, I'd pretty much take a packed lunch and I'd just head out for the day and meet some of the other kids who lived on neighboring properties and go and hang out down by the creek. And there was one of the neighbors' properties had this beautiful creek that ran through it. I don't think I ever took you there, but the dad was a builder and he'd built a full cottage for all of the kids to go and play down on this creek. And I'd go there all day. I just knew I had to be home by nightfall, and just had this incredible sense of freedom. Teenage years, it was a very small town, so as I started to grow and try to find my way and wanted to spread my wings, I needed to move on. I just couldn't. I felt quite suffocated, and it wasn't the people or the place or my family, and I missed my family desperately when I did leave, but I really needed to experience something new, probably because it was so isolating on the farm.
Yeah, I mean, the way I recall it too, it's like I would just, looking back, I'd categorize it like you lived the country life, right? The Aussie country life, although you weren't that far from Sydney. There was the country life going on. There's something very attractive about that. And I also think that there's probably things that were challenging. So cut to when you did leave, where did you head?
I moved interstate. I went as far away as humanly possible and went to Queensland. Could have gone to WA, but that was probably a little bit too far. And I went to university and I lived on campus for the first 12 months, which was a great stepping stone into the world. And then, you know, got a job, did uni. And then the following year, I moved to the Sunshine Coast and worked up there as part of my placement for university, and then moved back to uni. At University of Queensland at Gatton, which is near Toowoomba. So it was still country as well. And I worked on the weekends on the coast. And when you live in the country as well, you get quite used to driving long ways. So it didn't feel strange that I would have a job that was many, many hours away from where I lived.
Right.
And then I finished uni and I went to Hayman Island up on the Whitsundays, which was magic.
Yeah. One of the more famous islands up there, that's for sure. And beautiful parts of the world.
Yeah, and so my days off would be filled with snorkeling and going out on yachts and swimming with turtles and dolphins and going to beaches that were completely secluded from the world. It was tropical paradise. And from there, I left there.
How long were you there for?
I was only there for 6 months. Not very long, yeah, but it felt like longer. They say that time, island life is double. So, because you're on an island with the same people all the time. And from there, I went overseas and I traveled for a bit and things didn't quite work out how I'd planned. And so I went on a Kentucky tour.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot more in that story.
That's true, which you've furthered. If you want to know more, and we'll put this in the podcast notes, you can read Tiffany's book, Brave Enough Now. I want to go backwards and let's talk about our grandmother Jean Harradine and some of the things that you learned from her, because you became very close with her as did I. I think. And so did Maddie and so did Chris in their own ways. But I think us being a little older, we had more time with her in ways. And I also think you being the only girl, the only granddaughter, gave you a real closeness with her too. And in the women's department of things, So why don't you share some of the lessons that you learned from her or principles or...
Have you ever seen the movie MAME? It's got Lucille Ball in it. She plays the main character.
I think I have, but it's a long time ago.
And that character is our grandmother.
Yeah.
It is this woman full of life, never ever let anything get you down. Your life is full of blessings. There is so much joy to be had. Listen to the music, feel the air on your face. Dance, sing, love, live this incredibly big life. She had nothing. She had nothing in her life. She'd had a terrible life, but she was the most joyous, abundant in joy person that I have ever met. And her ability to just continually be filled with gratitude was such a gift.
Yeah.
So much fun.
You couldn't have a conversation with her without laughing.
Yes.
I mean, that every conversation, even the sad conversations I had with her or the depressing conversations, and some of those were, her being as a soldier in the army and some things that, through her marriage that she'd gone through, or even as a child. I mean, she really had gone through some horrific things. But I don't remember a conversation, even when we were crying, where I wasn't laughing at some point.
Yeah, that's right.
We
were crying laughing.
She would even have that stupid laughing box that she, I don't know if you remember, do you remember that?
I don't remember the laughing box.
So she had this laughing box and it'd be in her kitchen. This is when she lived in Bondi. And she'd go in the kitchen and she'd press the laughing box and it'd be, ha!
Oh my God, yes, I do. I remember playing with you in Bondi. I must have been maybe about three.
Yeah.
I was really little when she was in Bondi. And I just remember I loved her saucepans in that house. And she had that cat, that ginger cat. Everything was green and orange.
Burnt orange. The drapes were burnt orange. Everything was burnt orange.
The saucepans were like a burnt orange color.
Burnt orange tinge to them.
Yeah. Displayed on like a planter stand. I remember that clearly. Yeah. Yeah, she was very special. And I felt that, so because we lived in the country and she was in the city and she would come out on holidays, like on the school holidays, maybe twice a year, we didn't see her a lot, whereas we saw my dad's parents a lot. Every week we saw my other grandparents. And yes. I felt when I got older, so I went overseas, came home, and then I met my now husband and I'd moved into the city and I thought I missed out on so much of her when I was little. I'm going to make the most of it now. So I made sure I saw her every week, especially when I fell pregnant with Bethany. I was very, very sick with that pregnancy. And
yes.
I would go and spend the day with her. And those years of living in Sydney and making that effort were invaluable, and I'm so grateful that I did that.
Yeah, there's
very precious time.
Although there may have not have been a lot of material wealth, there was certainly wealth in like you were saying, gratitude and joy and fun and laughter. And yeah, if I ever needed a laugh, I'd certainly call her or drop by.
Yeah.
I mean, she just would do some wild things sometimes too. I mean, your conversation about your values and exploring them, but from things like singing to us, like, oh, Christmas tree, the fucking thing fell on top of me. And I would just, she sung that to me since I was like 8 years of age, every Christmas. I remember she took out her false teeth one time and scared the shit out of my neighbor. He fell over in shock. And she goes, he needed a good laugh. He needed a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
So there's certainly things like that. How do you think that's bled over into your life and current day?
So much. So much. And it also into my daughter as well. It's very much generational. David, my husband, always said that when the four of us were together, so Nan, Mum, myself and Bethany were together, he said it was like surround sound of giggles.
It's true.
So a lot of her, she had a lot of costume jewellery and a lot of those. Bethany wears those pieces of jewellery. She wears them under a uniform to school. She loves to feel that she has great grandmama. And that was the other thing too. Like, one of the things was that, oh, darling, she pretend to be posh. And, oh, darling, I don't possibly can't be great grandmother, but I could be great grandmama. And so we still all the time talk about great grandmama. Yeah, that was her name for her great grandchildren. So it was marvelous. Yes. So the love of life and the resilience.
Yeah.
Her resilience has flowed through. I was thinking about your podcast and thinking about everyone's virtues that you've interviewed and what that means. And I was thinking about how would I even describe myself? And so I was talking to David about it and he said, you're the most resilient person I've ever met. And I thought, no. Everyone's like this. I know that I have incredible resilience, but there's definitely influence from her in being resilient. Definitely.
I think too, and I, you know, it's hard to see sometimes outside in, but our family is probably one of extremes, right? Would you concur?
I don't know. I've met some other people who have similar family situations. I think so many people hide the truth of their lives, behind a mask. They don't want anyone to really know the truth. I think every family's got their quirks and things happening within them.
I do think that, and I was thinking about, you know, what happened to you in Switzerland. I was thinking about some of the things that have happened to your brother, Matty. You know, and from his, you know, strength and ability through golf and some of the trials and tribulations he's incurred. I think about my own. I think about my brother's. We've traveled long distances. We've done a lot of different things that I don't think a lot of people have ventured into, you know. A lot of people I still know didn't really move away from home, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. I always just think that everyone's just like me. I'm normal. I'm so probably far from normal. What is even normal?
Well, the new norm is, you know, normal wouldn't you really wouldn't want to be normal. Mm. But, you know, maybe extremes is the wrong word, but certainly there's a, I see a theme there that there's just like these things of energy, of like this strength, because you're talking about resilience, you know, and I see a strength in our family where we've gone after what we've wanted in our life, you know. So early on, I remember clearly you always wanted a family. You know, that was, I don't think that's ever shifted. I remember talking about it to you at a young age. And do you want to share a little bit about, you know, what happened to you and those choices around having children and anything of that nature here?
Well, I always knew I would have children. I wanted four children, but I couldn't have any more children after I had my son. I had a very, well, so I'm diabetic and from my accident in Switzerland. So I'm a survivor from the 1999 Swiss Canyoning disaster, which 21 people died in, was one of the largest natural disasters in Switzerland. And it changed the relationship between Australia and Switzerland, which was a very big deal and part of Australia's history. And I'm incredibly lucky to be alive.
Yeah.
One of my injuries was my pancreas got damaged. And so I'm now diabetic and I'm on an insulin pump. And so to have when I was first diagnosed and seeing doctors and in and out of hospital and all of those things, one of the doctors had said to me, you know, you really need to have had all your children by the time you're 30, because if you have them after you're 30, the likelihood of you surviving or having complications with your own body and your own health later on is very high. And things have changed a lot today. This is, you know, 20 odd years ago. And I mean, you still have to be very, 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 very careful. And so I was on a mission to find the right guy to get married and have children by the time I'm 30, and I did it.
You did.
I did. Cameron was born 2 days before I turned 30.
It's amazing.
Amazing. And I guess, you know, I never could see my life where I didn't have children. So if the possibility came that I wasn't able to have them for whatever reason, then I would have adopted, or I would have fostered, cared for children, or I would have, like, it was always very important to me that I open my heart to more people and more children. I love children. Mind you, I have teenagers now. I don't know how much I like them so much, but no, of course I love my teenagers. But family is so, such a strong thread in my life.
Yes.
It's incredibly important. All of my family. A couple of years ago, we travelled overseas and we went to Scotland, and we stayed in David's family's castle, so he's on his mother's side. And it was such an incredible experience to be witness to this space, knowing that it was the beginning of the lineage of my children. And we all felt very connected and drawn to the place. It was a gift to be there and experience that. But I also wanted to make sure as well, going back a bit, that when I met someone, that they had the same family values that I had. And I think both of my parents were very driven with family. I always wanted to spend more time with you guys and with the Harrodine side, but there were issues, as there are with every family, and that didn't always work out. So I was always thrilled when, especially when I became older and I was able to make my own choices, that I continued my connections and increased that relationship, or put more energy into those relationships. Like, I talk more to your dad as I've got older than I ever did as a kid.
Yeah.
And I feel very close to him and your mum as well. Like, she was in Melbourne for something. I can't remember what it was, a wedding or something perhaps. And then she came, I think it was my birthday or Beth's birthday. And she was here and part of it. And it just felt so natural and right. And just that connection that we have with family. Friends are very important in our lives, and some friends do become our family, but there's something in that,
in the blood, I don't
know if that bloodline, but that's what it is. It's that intensity of like, it's like a clan. It's the clan of staying together, and you would bend over backwards for anyone that was in your family. Well, I know I would.
Let's talk about that a little bit, and you meeting David, and you know, obviously you've now been in relationship and married. What did you say, 18 years? Or married 18 years, probably longer in the relationship.
Yeah, 20 years.
How do you think that you've formulated, because this often isn't a conscious conversation, maybe it was between you two. I think it's an ongoing conversation around how a family creates their value systems, your principles. It's not often like you'll, some people do it, we'll sit down and write all that stuff out. How have you gone about that with your family, Tiff?
Well, we're very strange. We openly discussed these things before we got married. So I wanted to make sure that, and so did he as well, to make sure we were on the same page. Mm-hmm. This is what I want for my life. These are my values. In fact, we even still have the piece of paper we worked on together before we got married, outlining what the importance of family was. We went and saw a family counsellor as part, when we got married in the church, they wanted us to go and do this couples like counselling, pre-marital counselling. And it was one of the best things I think we ever did.
Mm.
Because all of those things came out in daylight on a piece of paper outlining everything that we wanted. And the things that we were passionate about and was important to one person but not so much for the other person, well, there's a compromise. And we have a saying as well in our home that a no and a no is a no. A no and a yes is still a no, and a yes is a yes. So Everyone needs to come to a yes point for something to happen, otherwise it's no. And that has been a very good rule for all of us. That means that we all are more open about how we feel about things, and we're able to negotiate and compromise much easier knowing that they're the rules. So I think we put into place a lot of foundational rules in our relationship, which does not formal rules. That sounds a bit ridiculous, doesn't it? But we knew what each other wanted, and we knew what we weren't prepared to compromise on. I had said that I wanted to be a stay-home mum. I believe, or my belief system is, and is evidence to prove, that when the child is at home, that they're learning, they'll learn your beliefs and values, because the first 7 years of their life is where their foundational roots of belonging, how the world works, all of the big important things are those where your belief system is built, is in that first 7 years. And I didn't want our children to build the foundations of their life being taken care of by someone that I didn't know and what their belief system was. So, and it's fine. Lots of people don't want to do that. They're not in a position to do that. We were lucky enough to do that. That was our choice, and that was the reasons behind it. And there's absolutely no judgment on anyone that makes different choices. That's their family and their thing. But for me, that's what I wanted. And so we were very lucky that I could do that. And so I stayed home with the kids. David went to work, very old-fashioned 1950s housewife. And I think because we have such an open relationship, we were really able to work through what we wanted as a family unit, and we continue to do that. I listened to the radio. I felt quite out of my depth in terms of our relationship when Bethany was probably about 6 months old, because David was working, I was changing nappies, breastfeeding, you know, surrounded by washing. It's not glamorous. And he would come home and talk about his day, and he'd been doing this paper for Parliament and this for that. And I felt just like, how am I going to continue to connect with this person? Because I have nothing in my brain. It's turned to mush. So I started listening to the radio. It was the best thing I ever did. Good old ABC talkback.
Yeah.
Because I could take care of a baby and I could listen. And we didn't have podcasts back then. I'm showing my age. And now I listen to podcasts. But it was really, it really helped my brain kick back into gear again. And that was fantastic for me. One of the things that this woman rang up one day, and she had teenagers, and she said that she was having, had had a lot of trouble with her kids connecting and being open and honest. And she was a single mum, and I thought about how I could fix it. So she decided that she would at dinner every night sit down and they would have to say what their worst thing was, what their best thing was, and something funny, and end on a positive note. So whatever bad had happened in the day, they had to work through how they were going to fix it. Whatever good happened in the day, they were going to share it, and then they were going to end with a laugh. And I think Beth must have been about 3 years old at that point, and I was like, this is great. I'm going to start doing this. And we still do that to this day. We added on grateful onto the end. So something bad that happened, you know, what happened at school, what happened at work, what happened in your day. Sometimes you have nothing bad, which is amazing. And sometimes you might have only bad. But we come together as a family to work through it and be open and honest and share our vulnerabilities and share our love and our joy. And it just is a great format for, especially now that they are teenagers, for all of us to be connected. And we even did that throughout lockdown, which seemed ridiculous because we're all in the same house together
every day. We all have our moods
for months and months
where we are.
But that's right. So like you're getting really frustrated with the fact that you are stuck inside and that you are dealing with just these three other people, and I'm desperate to get out. But because we had already set that foundation in place, it was a safe space for everyone to be honest with each other and share openly, vulnerably, emotionally. There were tears, there were yelling, there was fights, but we were able to move through it and get to the other side. And we always wanted that as a family unit, that David and I wanted to create a family that was always together, not literally in terms of lockdown, but that we knew we always had each other's back, and that we would be there for each other no matter how bad it got and no matter how good it was. We would celebrate the wins and we would cry in sadness, and we would also be there in the really, really tough times and never, ever give up on each other, ever.
How, you know, I guess it's a slang thing that I'll say occasionally, but I think a good relationship is you know how to fight well, right? And what I mean by fight is really, you know, when you hit the conflict walls, you know, when you have really differ of opinions or strong value systems. And, you know, my father being a psychotherapist, as you know only too well, you know, there's many different theories around how people come together through relationship, if it's either karmic or, you know, a wound to be healed, or, you know, there's all kinds of different approaches. And I don't care to get into that so much, but more when you have had conflict, how have you resolved some of those really strong things? And often those conflicts are reoccurring, you know, and if we took it to the karmic level of these are the lessons that I'm learning, but this person reflects back and triggers that part of me, you know, how have you got through some of those situations and circumstances?
Well, considering that I'm now currently starting perimenopause, sucks. It's like a dragon is inside of me, and I get this massive burst of anger for no reason whatsoever, and then have this horrendous hot flush, and then have a hypo afterwards. It's very unpleasant. Anyway, as the dragon's emerging, I basically just tell everyone to back off, don't come near me. So that's always good. But we don't have heaps of conflict, and when we do, boy, oh, boy, you can see the lid fly off the house. One thing that I always stand by is letting it out of your body. I'm a big believer in the fact that we hold a lot inside our physical body. There's so much emotion that we hold inside ourselves. And so what we try and go for a run or go for a walk, cool off, calm to a point, become calm to a point that you're able to then have a conversation without the anger connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
Punch a pillow, whatever it is, jump up and down, do squats, do star jumps, but do something that releases that the energy out physically out of you. And I find that if we are able to do that, if I'm able to do that, Dave or the kids or whoever, especially for my son who's going through growing and huge surge of testosterone, he really needs a way to release that energy before he can then actually make sense of what he's trying to communicate. So that's a really, really important aspect of it. I also meditate every day. David meditates every day. He never used to, but he's come around to the dark side. And and he finds that incredibly beneficial. Keeps him more on an even keel, more balance. And I find as well that if I'm really struggling with something, I will go and meditate on something before I let loose. And I try really hard. I used to have a really great temper. And I'm trying. You had a really great temper too.
I think that's definitely in our family.
In the family. And I try to nip it in the bud before I get to that point, because it doesn't serve me. It doesn't serve anybody else. It just makes everyone else around me feel terrible, and it makes me feel terrible. So I don't want anyone else to feel terrible, and I don't want myself to feel terrible. So I try and address something. I don't always win. Often there's a, you know, like a with inside of me, I'll be stewing and stewing and stewing and not saying anything, and then I will snap, and that never goes so well. So I try really hard to avoid that and have conversations before it gets to that point, and not make it about someone else either. We've got very good at, and I think we've worked incredibly hard at being really conscious about not doing the blame game. And this is how I'm feeling at this time because of X, Y, and Z. And that's taken us years and years and years and years to be able to be brave enough to say that instead of just losing it at each other.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's, you know, it's, we've got to find our techniques, right? Of like what, first of all, like you mentioned, the consciousness and being aware and when that, you know, these things, when conflicts arise or you're being triggered, it can hit so quickly. Right. Now, some people express it, stuff it, you know, and I like your approach there of like, how do I get it out of me physically?
Mm.
You know, because I do think it goes into that whole emotional, physical body that can hold a lot of that, you know, that becomes our health. Right.
That's right. And then you end up getting sick and, you know, it just goes on and on and on. Another really good tool, I'm talking about techniques, is, if you actually change your body temperature, have a cold glass of water, you start to get hot when you get angry. Yes. So if you can have something cool, it will also help alleviate that, you know, the breathing techniques and all the rest of it. But sometimes you're just too far gone for that. But a nice cold glass of water can help as well.
Well, it's kind of the I don't know, the way of society now, right, which is propped up to the health theme. Because of the stress that I think society's been under through, you know, COVID and just, let's just call it the history of humanity, the human condition, you know, I think these techniques are emerging, but it's lovely to hear how you've gone about it in your family, and with your kids, and which no doubt they'll be passing some of those on to their children if they have children.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these things stick by us. And I think as a kid, and I don't know if you feel the same, Tiff, but, you know, you look at your parents and you just experience them. You don't think about this stuff that much, you know. But what I'm aware of is, like with my father, when he got involved with Insight Seminars, which is personal development training, when I was around 14, 15.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of kicked it on for me where I started looking at things different, because there was parts of me that was waking up and looking, you know, and that made me look at my parents' value systems. And I still look at it because it's really hard to see sometimes what our parents have ingrained in us, both positively and negatively, you know, and how automatic our behaviors can be because of the way we've been raised, you know. And, you know, I think we're very fortunate. We've had a really good upbringing, you know, and that doesn't go without challenge, right? I think just being born in Australia alone is hugely fortunate. You know, I've been to certainly places in the world that I go, whoa, you know, just being born on that island has made a massive difference to the way my life has evolved, you know. So those blessings, but those techniques, I think, are becoming more and more paramount. I think it's becoming more and more of a norm in society. I'm seeing more and more people, you talk about the cold, taking ice plunges to sweats to, you know, getting very involved with their physical health. I see that trending. I see the corporate world, how they're starting to wanting to incorporate, you know, mental health approaches, which I think is, but I do think it comes down to how are you making decisions by these principles or values that we've created, and sometimes really unconsciously because of how we were raised, you know.
I've done a lot of work on things that haven't served me from what I've been, how I was raised. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of who I am is completely my parents. We all are. I see my father in me so often, and I see my mother in me and my grandmother in me, and I love all of those different aspects. But there are obviously things where, you know, certain things that they've done or said, and that has a negative impact on us. It's just part of life. But I've worked really diligently on certain aspects to make those changes, because I want to be, I guess I, you know, we're always a work in progress. I want to be as the best person that I can possibly be, and try to be the best mother that I can be, the best wife, the best daughter, the best friend, the best cousin, the best whatever. Probably failing a bit on the cousin stakes. I haven't spoken to you in a while, but it's not from lack of love, I can assure you that. So I think that, yeah, those, they are ingrained in us, all of those values that our parents give us, but it's up to us to work out what works best for our life as individuals as we grow. And we can make changes. We can change what our belief system is. That's, if we need to, we totally can change that. We have the power to do that within us at any time.
And so kind of on heading towards close here, but the one value I wanted to bring up, which is so prevalent in your life, is being brave. And so speak to the listeners here and myself, and maybe even to yourself, how you've been brave in your life and how you encourage others to be brave. What does that look like?
I think being brave can mean so many different things, and it doesn't have to be someone who has won medals or gone to war. Yes, they are courageous and incredible human beings, but I think as individuals who some people think that perhaps they're not brave enough to say what they want to say or wear the clothes they want to wear or be the person they want to be or stand up for themselves. But everyone has the ability to be who they need to be, to trust in their own self. And the more
how do you do that? Let's just break that down for a minute. How does one trust their own selves?
Well, I think that to trust in yourself, we all have that inner voice within us. It's, you know, we've got one shoulder that says don't do this and the other shoulder that says yes, do that. But within us, we get a feeling about which one's right. Mm-hmm. We know instinctively. And that instinct never, ever goes away. Perhaps sometimes might be on holidays, but it is there. It is still there. And if you listen to that inner voice and you act on the inner voice, well, that's when magic comes your way, because that's when you become empowered in who you are. That's when you, You will feel better within yourself when you listen to your inner voice. Sometimes it's very hard to hear. Sometimes it's very quiet. Sometimes it's very reserved. But if you take that leap of faith, and I guess that's what actually ultimately what it comes down to, is that trusting in yourself is believing in who you are, believing that that is what is needed at this point in time, whatever that is, then you will find that the magic really will come to you. And that's being brave.
Really nicely said. It, you know, I think about, and I remember distinctly having a conversation with you. I don't know where or when exactly, you know, that's the type of man I am. but it was, you were starting to emerge with your story, you know, and I think the book was starting to be a nucleus inside of you. You'd either written some of it down. I know you'd been writing for a long time, including I remember you writing a lot of poetry. But it was starting to emerge inside of you, and I thought, whoa, here we go. Is this going to be evangelistic? You know, is this going to be like, you know, because a lot of people can turn situations and circumstances that have been very, you know, nearly seeing people die and nearly losing your life is no small feat. You know, this is really going to have a massive impact on you for the rest of your physical life. But what I wanted to share with you is what I've witnessed, and witnessed by probably by being at a far, not just physically, but listening to your podcast, reading your book, is how you have emerged through this. This body, I'm going to call it a body of work because I don't know what else to call it, but the body of work has grown. It's matured in you. You've matured it. It's matured you. The opportunities that are showing up around your story, which has allowed you to share more of who you are with people, which I think takes tremendous courage to be raw, to be vulnerable, to share the things that are not always, you know, spoken about. So it's just from me to you, it's just lovely to witness. I would consider something that has been, you know, when I go back to saying, I remember you saying I wanted a family, and how your life has blossomed and continues to. It's very rich, Tiffany. On many fronts, you know, and like any person, we all still continue to have our trials and tribulations. That's part of the growth. I really do see that, and I just wish you so much. You know, I really put a blessing on the next body of this work and how it's going to emerge, and so you get to share your heart and so other people can connect and learn from who and what you've experienced.
Thanks, Mark. That's what I hope happens too. Yeah.
So just having said that, is there any lasting comments that you'd like to share with our listeners here?
Well, I always, one of my favorite phrases that I love to say is that when we believe in ourselves, magic comes our way and it spreads like wildfire for others to join in. And that is very much being brave in every sense of it. So I hope that anyone who's out there listening to this wonderful podcast that you're putting out there to your audience and the world, that they feel inspired to listen to themselves.
It's funny you say that as you're talking. I realize from actually two different girlfriends, not at the same time, that is. I have two signs. One bought me a rock called Believe, and the other one gave me like a Ted Lasso Believe. I guess I've got to believe more, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
It does give great strength in self-belief, yeah. and probably believing in something greater, that the dots will align, that there is something greater to trust in, much bigger than who we are, you know, but not pretending to know it all.
100%.
Which I'm sure I've done at certain times. All right, Tiffany. Well, thank you so much for sharing this podcast with me. It's lovely to connect, even though we're at afar, and I look forward to when we can see each other physically again. It's been way too long.
I know. Throw my arms around you, give you a big cuddle. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Mark.
Lots of love.